अर्जुनस्यादौ कुर्वन्गीतामृतं दधौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः. हरे कृष्ण. वेलकम बैक टू अवर भक्तिशास्त्री कोर्स. टुडे विल डिस्कस दि लास्ट पार्ट ऑफ द थर्ड चैप्टर ऑफ द भगवद्गीता. So we discussed Arjuna's question 3.36. What is it that impels us to sin? Let us look at Krishna's answer now. 3.37. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Kamesha Krodhesha Rajoguna Sambhavaha Mahashano Mahapapma Vidyenamiha Vairinam. So Krishna answers, Kamesha. It is lust indeed. Esha, this. Krodhesha. Krodha is anger or wrath. And how do they begin? Rajogunasam udbhavaha. Udbhavaha is to be created. Sama means with. They arise with, born of Rajoguna. So when we come into Rajoguna, then Kama and Krodha come. Mahashano, Mahapapma. It is, Ashana is to eat or to devour. Mahashana is that which is a great devourer. Mahapapma is that which is extremely sinful. Very, very sinful, very great devourer. Vidyenam iha vairinam. Know this to be vairi. Vairi is the enemy. Know this to be the enemy. So, now, so Arjuna's question was, what is it that impels us to sin? So Krishna says that it is lust and then it is anger, which is the all-devouring, Prabhupada translates, all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. So, iha vairinam. The word iha is often used in the Bhagavad Gita to refer to this world. Iha ivatairjitah sargo yesham samye sitam manaha. This verse will come in later on also in the 5th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna will talk about samya. He says that those who are situated in equanimity, they've actually conquered, they've attained Brahman. Iha iva. Iha iva means in this world. So iha also means here. So in this world, for everyone, lust is an enemy. And lust transmogrifies. Transmogrifies means transform is to change. Transmogrify. That means to change into an ugly form. So lust transmogrifies into anger, wrath. So what exactly is this lust? Where does it come from? Prabhupada's purport is very interesting. So Prabhupada writes that how all of us are expansions ultimately of the Supreme Lord. Eko Bahusyam. The Lord expanded Himself into many for His ever-increasing spiritual bliss, and the living entities are parts and parcels of this spiritual bliss. So it's an interesting word. Prabhupada is not saying we are parts and parcels of the Lord. He is saying that we are parts and parcels of this spiritual bliss. Now what does it mean? How can we be parts of bliss? So that's a usage which indicates the point that we are meant to be blissful. So we are parts of Krishna, no doubt, but Krishna is Himself anandamaya abhyasat. He is actually full of joy, and similarly we are also part of joy. So Prabhupada is referring to that over here. Now, we are, Krishna is blissful, we are blissful. But the difference is that Krishna is independently blissful, we are dependently blissful. We are tiny. Because we are tiny, if we try to enjoy separate from Krishna, the happiness that we can get through that is tiny. But when we connect with Krishna, the happiness we get through that is huge. So therefore, what is advised, what is glorified is that we connect with Krishna. Then we can get enormous happiness. And that's the ultimate goal, which is being sought over here. So we now, because we are tiny, we can, if we try to enjoy ourselves, we'll get only tiny happiness. But when we try to enjoy separately, there's another consequence that comes. That desire to enjoy separate from Krishna disconnects us from Krishna. And then we come under illusion. And we seek enjoyment where there is no enjoyment. So we seek enjoyment in this world, in the objects of this world. And that causes bondage and suffering. So how do we come out of this bondage and suffering? For that, we have to inquire about spirituality. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, this material creation is created by the Lord to give facility to the living conditioned souls to fulfill these lustful propensities. And when completely baffled by prolonged lustful activities, the living entities begin to inquire about their real position. So when they are completely baffled, then they begin to inquire. So, athato brahma jigyasa. That is what Prabhupada will talk about in the next verse. So when will a person do brahma jigyasa? Actually, as long as the person is caught up in doing indriya trupti jigyasa, the person will have no impetus for doing brahma jigyasa. Indriya trupti jigyasa means, oh, where will I get enjoyment here? I will get enjoyment here. So the whole culture, media, advertisements in today's society, they provide us with newer and newer avenues for indriya trupti jigyasa. Oh, enjoy here, enjoy there. This is where you will enjoy. And you know, sometimes nowadays on television there are 300 channels. And people who sit down, they think there must be at least one program that I will enjoy. And I start on to it, it's boring. And switch to another channel. And switch to another channel. So, actually speaking, you know, people, when they're watching TV, they're more eager when they are surfing channels than when they're watching channels. Because when they're surfing, they're expectant. Oh, maybe I'll get something better. But once they start watching, it's boring. It's not what I expected. It's not as enjoyable as I expected to be. So there will be 300 channels on the TV, but actually, happiness is not available on any channel. Happiness is actually available only on the bhakti channel, and that is not there on television. Even if there are some programs which talk about bhakti, just they themselves cannot make us happy. It is, the bhakti channel is our connection with Krishna. So yes, of course, if there are devotional programs coming from proper sources, we can watch them. But the important point is that the conditioned soul gets very excited. Yes, maybe this will make me happy. So athato indra tupti jigyasa. Let me see, where can I get happiness? But after prolonged lustful activities, soul is completely baffled. There is no happiness in sense gratification. So I've tried so much, what should I do now? And at that time, maybe there is happiness somewhere else. That's what I need to inquire. And it is that point that Brahma Jigyasa begins. So Brahma Jigyasa is not just an idle intellectual inquiry. Brahma Jigyasa is not just an idle intellectual inquiry. Idle intellectual inquiry means somebody just sits down on an armchair and thinks, hey, you know, is there something called spiritual world? Is there something called God? Maybe not. Anyway, who can know about these things? Let me just turn on my iPod. I enjoy some music. Or let me turn on television and watch some TV. So no, that sort of inquiry, anyway, if somebody inquires about spirituality, that is good. But that sort of inquiry is not really Brahma Jigyasa. Brahma Jigyasa is when one is serious. Is there something beyond this world? If there is, I want to know what it is. Because what is in this world doesn't satisfy me. It's all tiny. It's all insignificant. It's all an anticlimax. So then one starts thinking, what can be there beyond this world? Let me find that out. And that's how the person starts inquiring about spirituality. So therefore, the important point is that all of us, we will have to come to that level sometime. We may have got some realizations of the ultimate futility of sensual pleasures. But although we get that realization doesn't stay an ultimate realization. Because again, the world is filled with so many promises of sense gratification that maybe this will give me happiness, maybe that will give me happiness. So again, we return back to the same things. So if you want to go beyond that, what we need to do is, we need to get a channel by which we can also experience spiritual happiness. And then we contrast, this happiness is so fulfilling, this happiness is so unfulfilling. Why should I chase after it? Let me chase after that. So athato brahma jigyasa actually begins when we become frustrated with material enjoyment and start seriously seeking for spiritual enjoyment. So Prabhupada, in a lecture to the hippies during one of the Rath Yatra festivals in America, said, so all of you hippies, you're not very much appreciated in America. You're considered frustrated people. Okay, people think that, oh, you're all frustrated. But Prabhupada said, you know, I appreciate all of you. So human life is meant to become frustrated. But frustrated in what sense? Frustrated in, so in America, people had huge amount of enjoyment available. Actually, after the Second World War, America became enormously prosperous because, practically speaking, none of the Second World War conflicts were fought on American territory. So America suffered very little casualties in terms of infrastructure damage. Of course, there were some soldiers who were killed. The only attack on American territory was on Pearl Harbor. That was right at the fag end of the war, practically speaking. And America provided weapons to the Allies. And selling weapons means getting money also. So they did not suffer much damage and they got a lot of money. So though for World War II veterans, when they came back, they had a fairly good life with them. And when, so they generally, whatever material dreams people have, I want to have a good house and I have a good family, I have a good job, a good bank balance. Now, these kind of dreams, the children of the Second World War veterans, they had all this right from the beginning of their lives. Second World War ended in 1945 and 1960-65, the generation of children, they had all this. And they had it all and they felt that it was nothing. It didn't satisfy them. So, what the previous generation of Americans were dreaming about, this is what we should have. These people had this and they felt that there's nothing in it. Must be something more to life. And that's how they started exploring. Maybe we'll get this. Whatever more is there in life, maybe we'll get it through drugs. And that's how they started going towards drugs. Later on, of course, they started, once they got into drugs, drugs got into them. And then they got caught by drugs and it just became a search for drugs, not a search for spirituality. So that was unfortunate. But there were some people who did seriously seek spiritual experiences through drugs. And Prabhupada told them that Hare Krishna will give you a spiritual experience which is far greater than the experience that you may get through drugs. So now, Prabhupada is saying that human life is meant to become frustrated. That this routine, stereotype life of trying to make it happy and big in this world, that is not the ultimate goal of life. One should seek something higher. So, athato brahma jikyasa. Now, then Prabhupada says that, how does one... This is a very significant point. The origin of lust is also in supreme. Now, how can we say that the origin of lust also is in supreme? Because Prabhupada says, Janmadyasyataha, everything comes from the supreme, so even lust will come from the supreme. So, what does it mean, lust comes from the supreme? It essentially means that the desire for loving and the desire for being happy, which is what creates the male-female attraction, which is what underlies the male-female attraction, that actually is present in Supreme also. So everything comes from the Supreme, so that desire, lust also in its original form, it's called Adhirasa, that comes from the Supreme. And it is meant to be directed towards the Supreme. When it is misdirected, then that causes suffering. And Prabhupada gives example of redirection. So this desire is there, if it goes down lower, then it can become anger and it can cause a lot of suffering. But it moves upwards, then it can become transcendent. So Prabhupada gives the example of Hanuman, spiritualizing anger. But the important point here is that where does lust come from? It comes from the Supreme Lord. And it is a misdirection of our original search for happiness. So Krishna is telling, Mahashano Mahapapma, it is all devouring sinful enemy. Why all devouring? All devouring because once a person becomes lusty, actually lust can just go out of control and it can blind a person completely. Once there is normal sexuality, then there is all sorts of different kinds of sexualities which people have, homosexuality and bisexuality and these sort of things. And then beyond that, there can be different kinds of even perversities that are there. So there can be pedophilia, where people are attracted to small children, and they brutalize small children in that. And this is even coming in a very, very revolting way in the form of abuse of children within families. Small children, many of them suffer child abuse because they have some relatives whom the family members trust, and those relatives, they sometimes violate and brutalize the children. It's terrible. And sometimes it may happen with parents also abusing children. That's rare, but that also happens. That's incest. So, actually, lust has no limits to where it can go. So, all devouring. Once lust gets triggered, then in many cases for lust, nothing remains sacred. Nothing remains sacred. So, for lust, when nothing remains sacred, anything can happen. And there can have perverse fantasies which people have. So, these can make mahashino mahapapma. So, lust leaves nothing sacred, lust devours everything. So, I said mahashino mahapapma. It is the vidyenamiha vairenam. So, we see today in the world sexual assaults and sexual abuse, rapes, and everything surrounded with that is such a big problem. It all originates in lust. And when it originates in this way, it's quite sad that people are not able to see the link between what they are looking at eagerly in the media and what they are looking at horrified in the news. What does it mean? Sometimes in the advertisements, in the billboards, in the movies, there is so much sexuality being explicitly promoted. That means there are sexually there are obscene pictures, revealing pictures of male-female sexuality, and then there are incidents which are reported in newspapers of people being perversely violent and people become victims, and people look forward to that kind of depiction in the media. And they are horrified. How can you do like this? But actually the same force, same lust that is being triggered through those kind of hoardings, those kind of pictures, then when it gains a deadly momentum, it becomes like this. So most people may say, no, actually the movies are depicting romantic, consensual sex. They say, both man and woman, they are attracted to each other and doing everything voluntarily. But here what is happening, it is forcible, it is not at all romantic, it is brutal. And they may say that, that is something good, this is something bad. There is a difference between the two, no doubt. But the point is, that reference can be understood when a person is not blinded by lust. Once a person becomes blinded by lust, then lust doesn't see all these differences. Once lust is triggered, and then it can just transmogrify into ugly forms which people can't even think about, most people. So of course, if people have culture, people have morality, then most people may not go from romantic, consensual to forcible, brutal things. But there's actually, most people have too much of a positive self-image. I will never do such things. Well, actually, lust doesn't respect our moral boundaries most of the times. So we have to be careful. Ajamil, when he just saw, while passing by, saw that image, saw that Shudra and Shudrani embracing. If somebody had told him before that, after 1 week you will be throwing out your wife from your house, you will be throwing out your parents from your house, and you will be cohabiting with a prostitute. The Shudrani said, what nonsense. In today's time, if somebody say like that, a person will say, I'll do a libel case against you. How can you speak something like this to me? Ajamil would never have thought I would ever do something like this. But then once that lust came, just devastated him completely. So therefore, lust is ihavairinam. It is the enemy of the world. So it is an enemy. And Krishna says that this is the enemy which impels us to act sinfully. Now normally when we think of an enemy, we think of somebody with a gun. There is our country is there, some other country is there, and the enemy is attacking from the border. Or maybe they are coming by fighter pilots. Or nowadays we may say it's a masked people with suicide bombers. We will think of that side of people as enemies. So then the question comes up, if lust is an enemy, what kind of enemy is it? Krishna and Arjuna, they are on a battlefield, and the enemies they are saying, Duryodhana, Dushasana, Karana, they are there. Karana is not there right now, but Karana is very much there in the minds of everyone. They are all there on the battlefield, Duryodhana, Dushasana, you can see. So what kind of enemy is this? And how does this enemy attack? So that Krishna explains in the next verses. So he gives three examples here to illustrate how lust covers a person. Dhumena vriyate vahanir yathadarsho malena cha यथोल्बेनावृतो गर्भस्तथा तेने दमावृतम्। सो धूमेन इज बाय स्मोक, आवृयते, आवृयते इज कवर्ड, वहनीर इज फायर। सो जस्ट एज स्मोक इज कवर्ड बाय फायर, यथा दर्शो मलेन च। सो दर्श अदर्श इज मिरर, दैट मीन विच यू कैन गेट दर्शन, आदर्श दैट इज मिरर, एंड मलेन च, मलेन इज डर्ट, डस्ट। जस्ट एज डस्ट कवर्स अ मिरर, यथा उल्बेन आवृतो गर्भस, उल्बेन इज द वूम, गर्भस इज एम्ब्रियो, जैसे द वूम कवर्स द एम्ब्रियो, सिमिलरली तथा तेनेदम आवृतम, सिमिलरली तेना, तेना इज रेफर्स टू दैट, दैट लास्ट, इदम दिस, दैट द सोल इज कवर्ड, तेनेदम आवृतम। सो इज गिविंग थ्री एग्जाम्पल्स ऑफ हाउ लस्ट कवर्स द सोल। सो लेट्स लुक एट दिस थ्री एग्जाम्पल्स नाउ। सो प्रभुपाद एक्सप्लेन द परपोर्ट एंड भक्तिनाथ ठाकुर ऑल्सो एलैबोरेट्स दिस इन हिज कमेंट्री, रसिक रंजन एंड विद्वत रंजन। सो व्हाट डज ही से ओवर हियर, द फर्स्ट एनालॉजीज, दिस इज फायर कवर द स्मोक, सो दिस रेफर्स टू द ह्यूमन स्पीशीज। सो व्हाट इज द नेचर ऑफ द कवरिंग, इट इज थिन एंड पेनेट्रेबल, इट मीन्स व्हेन स्मोक इज देयर जस्ट ब्लो एंड देन प्रॉपर स्टोकिंग दिस कैन बी मूव असाइड, बट देन डस्ट इज देयर इन द मिरर, then that is considered to be the covering in animal species. Now sometimes the dust may be so much that one cannot practically see the mirror only. There appears to be just a wall of dust only. But thick and that sort of thing is, one may not even know that there is a mirror behind the dust. It just appears to be a wall of dust. That is thick and tough to penetrate. So the animals, they will take some time to come to a higher level of consciousness where they can perceive spirituality. And womb and child, that refers to plants. You know, the child in the womb, or the embryo in the womb, is in a state of helplessness. It can't do much, and you know, it can't prematurely come out. Yeah, often premature pregnancy can lead to problems also. So it has to take its own time. So it is super thick and penetrable only after long effort. The effort is what? Effort is in the plants. Plants cannot do any effort. So it just, the effort is here in terms of time. The plants will have to go through their own life course, and that soul will have to evolve, and eventually it will come to the human species. So essentially the point which Krishna is making is, lust covers us. Now you say, what kind of covering is it? So first is, what exactly is lust? Is lust a thing or is it a desire? That means, is there something called lust which is there out there, or it is just when I have some desire it is called as lust? So is lust a thing or is it just our own feeling? Actually, it is both. What does it mean it is both? Krishna is here talking about lust as being a thing. He's saying, okay, this is the kind of covering, and he's referring to it as an enemy. So that means there are lusty impressions which are stored in the mind, and there are lusty desires which are triggered in the mind. So lusty impressions means what? That we may have seen certain images, we may have heard of certain things, and those have created certain impressions which are there in the mind. So, for example, in a small infant, at least from this life's point of view, they are not there. But in most people, they are there. So, this is the impressions which are there. Now, different people may have been exposed to different degrees of lust. So, lusty imagery, nowadays with the availability of internet porn, people may have so much garbage in their minds. So different people will have different levels of impressions, and these impressions are what are stored in the mind. So in that sense, these impressions are actually there. That's a thing which is there in the mind. Lust is a thing. But that thing, what does it do? That thing provokes us. And when it provokes us, then we get the feeling. So when I'm talking about a thing, it's not a thing like this hand, or it's not a thing like a table or something like that, not like a thing like a wall. It's not gross, it's subtle. But subtle things are also things. So they are real. So feeling refers to, so based on that kind of thing, there is a certain thing, certain feeling that gets activated. So for example, if there were no lusty impressions in people's minds, then even if males and females saw each other, then they would not have so much agitation. But when male, when there is lusty feelings are there, when male female see each other, then there is agitation that happens. So this agitation, what is it the result of? It is the result of the impressions. So now the impressions Krishna is telling, they are already there. We should not assume, we should assume that we are pure devotee. We should assume that lusty impressions are there. But just because the impressions are there, doesn't mean that we have to have those feelings and allow those feelings to take control of us. Those impressions will create certain feelings in our heart. But we can say no to those feelings. Just like when we are walking on the streets, we can't say that, you know, there should not be any hoardings which are obscene. That is the way the culture is in most many places in the world. And the hoardings will be there. You know, people will be dressing in provocative ways also. Now, we can't stop that. That is a lusty stimulus that is there outside. But what we can do is, we can avoid exposing ourselves to it too much, and we can avoid succumbing to it, avoid getting controlled by it. So just as we understand that there can be external provocative stimuli which we can be prevent from controlling us, similarly there can be internal provocative stimuli which are the impressions of what we have exposed ourselves to in the past, which we can say no to. When they start proposing themselves, when they start prompting and pushing and pinching and punching and prodding us, do this, we can say no to that. So here Krishna is right now talking about lust as a thing. It is there in all living beings. So now Krishna says it is a covering. Now what does this covering do? So this covering prevents us from having spiritual awareness. It makes us spiritually forgetful. And it makes us materially desirous. So in a sense, this is a covering. So many of us may have heard about the Avaranatmika Shakti and the Prakshepatmika Shakti. Maya has two energies. Avaranatmika is, here the word is Avritam. So covered. Avaranatmika is that which covers. Prakshepatmika is that which pushes. So Avaranatmika Shakti means that which makes us forget our spiritual identity. And Prakshepatmika Shakti is that which drags us towards material illusion. So a simple example to understand this is, when people go to a theater to watch a movie, there are two stages in the progression of the illusion. First is, the lights are turned off. So when the lights are turned on, people forget the reality. And then the lights are turned on. Which lights are turned on? The image on the movie screen starts. So, the first turning off of the lights makes people forget the reality. And the second turning off of the lights drags people into the illusion. So, Avaranatmika Shakti is like the switching off of the lights. And Prakshepatmika Shakti is like the turning on of the lights which start the illusion. So, both these, they propel the soul into illusion. They rip the soul out of reality and propel the soul into illusion. So, similarly, this lust, what does it do? Avritam, it covers us. So it makes us forgetful of our spiritual identity and it prompts us to push up or to get into material illusions. Now we want Avritam. Krishna is saying it covers. How does it cover? That Krishna will describe in the next verse. So Krishna is saying these are degrees of covering, but what is the method of covering? It's not of like if a blanket is there on my face, I can't see anything. So what kind of covering is this? So Krishna describes that in the next verse. Avritam jnanam etena jnanino nityavairina. So avritam jnanam etena jnanino nityavairina kamarupena kaunteya dushpurena nalena cha. So avritam. What does it cover? Jnanam, the knowledge. Etena, etena means of this. Who is this? Jnanino. It covers the knowledge of the soul who is actually the knower. The Atma is here called as a Jnani. The Atma knows that actually Satchitananda, Satchit is a faculty of the soul. The soul is knowing. The soul has the capacity of knowledge, but that knowledge capacity, the awareness capacity of one's spiritual identity is covered. And then after that, Nitya Vairina. This is a frightening word actually. Now Krishna has said earlier in 3.37, Iha Vairina, this enemy here. But here the word is Nitya Vairi. Nitya Vairi means eternal enemy. So why eternal enemy? You know, this enemy is such an enemy. You know, if we have some enemy in this world, then that enemy will maybe torture us, kill us, and that's the end of the enmity. But this is an enemy which goes on lifetime after lifetime. Lifetime after lifetime. So, in terms of identity, strategy, and longevity, this is our worst enemy. Longevity means lust will keep tormenting us lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Longevity, Nitya Vairina. Then identity means what? Actually, most of the time we don't even come to know who is the enemy only. What happens for most people is they feel lusty, and when they feel that lust is not satisfied, when they feel angry because lust is not satisfied, then they think those people who did not allow me to satisfy my lust, they are my enemies. So rather than becoming angry with lust, they become angry with all the factors that are obstructing their fulfillment of lust. So it's identity. So what has happened is identity. We are not even able to identify the enemy. And then so that sort of enemy is very dangerous. That's like a spy. If a spy has penetrated into the enemy ranks, then the enemy can be sabotaged from within. Because the enemy is, okay, we'll shoot there, we'll shoot there. But if the home power, if a spy has penetrated into our ranks, and we are prepared for the enemy, where is the enemy? I'm going to shoot. And a spy comes from behind and blows a bomb under our feet only. So the spy can sabotage our efforts from inside. So like that, we are thinking our enemies are outside, but our enemies are actually inside. And that way, we get caught up. It's with identity and strategy. Now what happens is normally when an enemy attacks us, the enemy attacks and we fight, and the enemy has to use its forces to curb us. But actually when lust conquers, what does lust do? Lust uses our own force to destroy ourselves. How is that? When a person becomes lusty, then the person doesn't have to be forced to do bad things. Doesn't have to be forced to do wrong things. That person does wrong things oneself. And that is a tragedy. Right? And the people get so many nasty sexually transmitted diseases. So how do they get those diseases? Actually, it is they themselves went and indulged in those things, and that's how they got the diseases. So many ways people get such terrible, this is terrible complexities people get into. So rather than the enemy destroying ourselves, just as if there's a computer virus, once a virus comes into our computer, it uses our own computer space, it uses our own computer, the electricity that we are providing to the computer, and it uses our own computer's technological resources, and then it damages the computer. So like that, when lust comes in, it's that it turns our own resources against us. There's a person right there ready to shoot the enemy, and somebody comes along, hey, no, why are you pointing the gun there? Turn the gun here, point here, shoot now. So that's it. Oh, that's how Ajamil, well-educated Brahmin, a cultured person. But what happened? Lust attack. And he destroyed himself. So that's how lust is Nitya Vairina, in terms of identity, in terms of strategy, in terms of longevity. Lust can destroy us. And that's why Nitya Vairina. And then Kama Rupena Kaunteya. Who is this enemy? Kama Rupena. It is in the form of lust. And Krishna says, Dushpuren analena cha. So anala is fire. Dushpura is insatiable. It burns like fire and it is insatiable. So now, this idea of lust being like fire is something which is even acknowledged in romantic literature. For example, movies, they may have songs, you know, my heart is on fire. Or they may, in Hindi movies, they have songs like Sawan Jo Aag Lagaye, you know, the fire that is lit in spring. Now, they also acknowledge that fire, but their illusion is what? That indulgence will extinguish the fire. But indulgence won't extinguish the fire. indulgence will aggravate the fire. Why will it aggravate the fire? Because indulgence acts as a fuel. When it acts as a fuel, when a fuel is put in fire, the fire is going to blaze further. The fire is not going to get extinguished. So, Yayati, in the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, is a story which describes how he was captivated by Devyani and he enjoyed with her for 100 years. But then after Vishayanse Purnam Varsha Sahasram, he said, enjoyed for 100 years, but then Vishayan Sevate Asakrit, continuously enjoyed, but still not satisfied. And then he says, actually, Najatu Kama Kamanam Upabhogena Shamyati Havisha Krishna Vartmeva Bhuya Eva Bivardhate. He says, Najatu Kama Kamanam by Kamaha, by lust, Kamanam, by indulgence and lust. It cannot be satisfied. Upabhogena Shamyati, no. It upabhoga by indulgence, Shamyati, pacifying, no, no. He says, Najatu Kama, it will not happen. Why? Havisha Krishna Vartmeva. When we put some in fire, we put some oblations, we put some fuel. Bhuya eva bivardhate. It will blaze forth all the more. Dushpure analish. So lust will be aggravated by indulgence. It will not become subdued by indulgence. So then we may wonder, actually then what is, if it's like that, then is there something like dharmic lust? So there is marriage. Then is it that within the limits of dharma also, if one engages in lust, that will also aggravate? Then what is the point of grihastha ashram? So if lust is always going to get fueled by indulgence, then what is the point at all? How is grihastha ashram an ashram? And how is it going to purify us? So actually, in grihastha ashram, it is not the indulgence that gives realization of purification. It is the observance of dharma that brings about purification and realization. So, grihastha ashram is not, Prabhupada would say, differentiate between grihastha and grahamedi. So, grahamedi is a person who is interested only in sense gratification. Grihastha is a person who is, yes, sense gratification is a part of life. And if then a man and woman may come together, but that is only one part. And the center is dharma, center is Krishna. So, what brings purification, what brings realization, is not the indulgence, it is the practice of dharma. So when there is a practice of dharma, then that brings about purification, that brings us, that reminds us that there is a higher happiness available. And then when we have that, when we keep ourselves connected with that higher happiness, and then there is the worldly happiness that also that is there, sensual happiness. One compares, one says, actually this is there, and I was so excited about it, but it is something so great, this is better. So actually, it is only when you practice dharma that there is the comparison that can be done. This is higher, this is lower. If one doesn't practice dharma, then one engages in sense gratification, all that results by that is this, the lust keeps getting more and more. And then the person feels unsatisfied with one partner, and then the person goes to some other partner. Then people can have extramarital affairs, and then all sorts of things happen like that. Why? Because it is not that marriage itself is meant to be reduced to the arrangement for sexual indulgence. It is only one part of it. Actually, the primary purpose is to be practice dharma and to become purified by that. So, dushpurena nature. Dushpurena means that which cannot be satisfied at all. So, yes, there is definitely dharmic allowance is there for indulgence. But the allowance means that it has to be done under regulation. And by doing it under regulation, gradually, and by the practice of dharma, one gets a higher taste, which gradually frees one from it. So otherwise, if one just fuels through indulgence alone, it will just keep blazing more and more and more. So Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport here, that it's a classic statement. He first says this world is like a Maithun Nagar. And everybody here is shackled by sex life. It says criminals are kept within bars. Similarly, the criminals who are disobedient to the laws of the Lord are shackled by sex life. Now, it's interesting. The people, nobody will think of sex life as a shackle. People think, sex life is very enjoyable. Where is the shackle in that? But the shackle is that's what keeps us in the bodily conception of life. You know, one cannot get into sexual enjoyment without thinking that I am the body. And thinking I am the body is the cause of bondage, is itself bondage actually, at one level. It's the bondage of misidentification. And beyond that, there is a further bondage that results when we act at the bodily platform. So, sex in that sense is a shackle. Why? Because the soul is here, say, and the body is here. So, the sex desire binds the soul to the body. Because, why it binds? Because the soul is here. This is the way I want to enjoy, and to enjoy this way I need the body. The sex desire binds the soul to the body. So that's how the souls who do not want to serve Krishna, they are imprisoned in the bodily conception of life through sex desire. And in the bodily conception of life, there is old age, disease, death, the repetition of the samsara chakra, and adhyatmika, adhibhautika, adhidaivika, all these kleshas will come. And then Prabhupada makes another classic statement in the next statement only in the purport. Advancement of material civilization on the basis of sense gratification means increasing the duration of the material existence of a living entity. So, advancement of material civilization on the basis of sense gratification. What does this mean? This means that if we think, what is progress? Progress means to find out newer and newer ways of sense gratification. If that's what we think as advancement. So then, the result of this definition of advancement is that people get more and more entangled. Means increasing the duration of the material existence. How? So in the past, if somebody would get lusty, what were the options that person would have? Maybe that person could have some, if the person is so lusty, that person is not satisfied in marriage, and person may have some affair somewhere, or may go to some arrangement of prostitution or something like that. But now, if a person becomes lusty, then what happens? Just by clicking one button, one can get filthy images and filthy scenes from everywhere, practically in the world, put together for access. And not only that, you know, what happens is, people who have their most perverse images, people with the most perverse fantasies, they make their most perverse images and they put it on the net. And thousands of people see it. And then what happens by this is, people's minds get so contaminated. Now the porn industry in the world today is one of the biggest industries. The amount of money that is spent in America on baseball and football, the franchisees, all the franchises of the biggest clubs, the amount of money that is earned through all the franchisees, the amount of money that is earned through the porn industry is much more than that. So it is. So many people are caught in that, and porn addiction is a very serious addiction, unfortunately. And there is only one aspect of sexual addiction, or the complications that come from excessive sexual indulgence. So now the point is that here, so much technology, now developing the internet required a huge amount of intelligence. At least the intelligence, when you talk about material intelligence, the processing and understanding, electronics and telecommunications and all that. But then, if the definition of success is, yes, you ought to have facilities for sense gratification. So, then that is pointless. When I was doing my engineering, I was quite interested in science, and more in how things work, understanding nature, understanding the mechanisms and the principles of how things work. But then, I studied electronics engineering and I came into fourth year. Then I came to know that one of the major applications of electronics engineering is to develop better and better forms of television and other forms of other similar kinds of multimedia that is used for entertainment. So then I thought, here I have used my intelligence for several years for what? To provide a better idiot box for people? And what is happening by watching this idiot box? People are becoming idiots. So if I use my intelligence to develop better idiot box by which people become more idiotic, then I am an idiot. Is this the way I want to use my intelligence? Thankfully, soon after that, I was introduced to Krishna consciousness. But now it's not that all engineers are going to do only this. But you have to understand that people who are in the field of science are not free to do whatever research they want. They also need their career, they also need finances. And most of the finances for science and technology, they come primarily from the defense industry or the consumer industry. So defense industry is about defending, and consumer industry is for eating, sleeping, mating. So that's where the funding comes from. That's where most of the research has to be done. So advancement of material civilization on the basis of sense gratification, that's the kind of advancement that is mostly happening today. And what does it do? It means increasing the duration of the material existence of a living entity. It increases the duration because with this kind of conception, the living entity gets more and more trapped, more and more trapped. Whatever little imagination the soul had earlier, now the imagination blaze forth. They become far, far worse. And then, Prabhupada further says in the purport, last sentence, while one enjoys sense gratification, it may be that there is some feeling of happiness. But actually that so-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. So this is a statement that we can embed in our heart. Yes, the Prabhupada is giving concession over, yes, there may be happiness. While one enjoys sense gratification, it may be that there is some feeling of happiness. You may say, no, not some feeling. The poets write so many songs about it, the movie is depicted so much, and there is so much, there is a lot of happiness there. Actually speaking, it's a huge amount of exaggeration. The body's capacity to enjoy is very limited. And we can't expand it no matter what we do. So there is some feeling of happiness. But even if we agree that there is some happiness, the point is that actually that so-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. Why the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer? Because that feeling of happiness traps the person. How is it trapped? When there is a mouse that has to be caught, the mouse is running around in the house, then some cheese or some other eatable suitable for the mouse is brought, and that is put in the mouse trap. And the mouse comes along, it's searching, it sees the cheese and it comes inside the trap, and as soon as it comes, the door of the mouse trap closes and it's trapped. So now, that cheese, in eating that cheese, there is some pleasure, no doubt. But that so-called feeling of happiness is not going to make the mouse happy. Actually, it is going to make it miserable. It is going to cost its life also. So that means that feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy. There is happiness, but that feeling of happiness is the enemy. Or like a fish and a bait. So when the bait is there and the fish catches the bait, when it initially eats, at that time, oh, it's so delicious, I want it. And you said, attack. At that moment, the bait gets caught in the mouth and it gets trapped, it's pulled out. It is pulled out and then dragged out to its death. So like that, actually there is happiness. There may be some happiness, but that happiness is the enemy. So that is just like when a person is drinking. A person may feel I feel such a relief when I drink. But then, after that, it is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. So, now this is something which is quite a bitter pill to swallow. It's one thing to say you should not do it. Don't get involved in sense gratification. But it's quite another to actually expect that happiness is bad. It's not just bad from a moral point of view. Some nowadays people think moral values are up to you. You think that is wrong, so it's wrong for you. I don't think it is wrong, so it's not wrong for me. People think moral values are relative. Moral values, even if people don't believe it, right? Actually the suffering and the complication that comes in life, that is not relative. And if a person gets involved in illicit sex and then gets AIDS, that's not relative. Even if a person doesn't believe anything is wrong with illicit sex, and if the person gets AIDS, there's no relativity in that. So the consequences are there. So the obnoxious is considered obnoxious because it is noxious. Obnoxious means that which is bad. Noxious means that which is poisonous. So actually, illicit sex, Prabhupada uses the word like abominable, obnoxious. Why do we use that word? It's not just a moral, it's not just a value judgment based on some outdated conceptions of morality. Oh, people in the past thought this is right and this is wrong. You know, we have become modern, so we understand there's nothing wrong about it. These are not outdated conceptions of morality. This what is obnoxious because it is noxious. Noxious means poisonous. Lust is considered more poisonous than poison. Why? Actually, there is Vishya and there is Vishaya. So Vishya is poison, Vishaya is sense objects. So Vishya destroys only after consumption. But Vishaya destroys just by contemplation. When one contemplates on sense objects, the consciousness is getting contaminated, it starts getting poisoned, and eventually it's destroyed. So Vishaya is not as dangerous as Vishaya. Therefore, one has to be extremely cautious. So-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. Let's move forward now. Now, Krishna, what is Krishna describing over here? He's describing the enemy. How does the enemy act? Enemy covers our intelligence. Now, where, the next question may come, where is this enemy present? So that he describes in this verse. Indriyani mano buddhi asya adhishthanam uchyate etair vimohayatesha yanamavritya dehinam. So, indriyani mano buddhir. That this last is situated in the senses, the mind and the intelligence. Asya adhishthanam uchyate. Asya adhishthanam. It is situated in this. And etair vimohayatesha. From there, it deludes the soul. Jnanam avritya dehinam. How does it delude? It covers the intelligence of the soul. Jnanam, it covers the knowledge of the soul. This is again a very significant point. That where is lust situated? Lust is situated in our own mind, in our own senses, in our own intelligence. You know, sometimes people say that, oh, you know, some men may say, oh, we are just males. You know, if women dress inappropriately, we will naturally become lusty. No, actually, lust is not situated in the female form. Lust is not situated in the female dress, the way female dress or don't female dress or not dress. You know, that's we may a male may see a female, and male may get provoked. Now that same female may have a baby in her arms, and that baby may be touching the private parts of the female. That female, that baby doesn't feel agitated. So, if that lust were present just in the female form, then the baby should also feel agitated. Does this baby not feel agitated? Because lust is not present in the form. Lust is provoked through that form, but lust is present in our own mind, intelligence and senses. So, we can't blame others if we become lusty. That lust is there within us. So, you know, there is this very sad phenomena called blaming the victim. Blaming the victim means that if a woman is violated, people say, no, that woman, she dressed like that, she went here, she did that, that's what she deserved. No matter how a woman dresses, the responsibility for wrongdoing, if some wrong is done, that is primarily if the male has forcibly violated a woman, then the responsibility is on the male, not on the female. You know, the character of the female doesn't matter. Even if a woman is a prostitute, you know, prostitutes are meant to be paid. They are not meant to be forcibly violated. So, the point is that we can't wash off the responsibility. Oh, people dress like that, that's why, what can I do? No, but that doesn't mean that gives us a license to do whatever we want. The lust is within us. So having said that, there is also another perspective. The other perspective is that, you know, the way we dress, the way we behave, sends messages about us to others. That's the way people perceive us. That's natural. And that's inevitable. So if women wear clothes that are revealing, women wear clothes that are provocative, then by that, they are sending messages that, you know, we want to be seen as sex objects. So we want to be seen as sex objects. Now, women also have to ask this question, is that the message that I want to send out to people? Now, if that's not the message I want to send out, then I shouldn't dress like that. So, it's like, if a person is walking through a dark alley in a city, a dark, lonely alley, and that person has, you know, 1,000 rupee notes coming out of the pocket, you know, maybe 50 notes from here, 50 notes from here, 50 notes from here, 50 notes from here, and then some people come and pounce on that person and rob that person and take away the money. And then, the person goes to the police. He says, I was robbed. And the police ask him, what all happened? He says, you know, this was what happened. Why did you have to keep the money like that? He says, no, but that's my right. you know, I it's my money, I can keep it whichever way I want. Now it's not a question of legal rights over here. Yes, you know, it's a matter of legal right. You know, whether the person is exposing the money or concealing the money. If somebody else forcibly takes the money, the thieves are wrong. And the thieves have to be punished. So from the legal point of view, whether the money is concealed or revealed doesn't matter. If somebody is forcibly taking the money, that person is forcibly taking the money is a criminal. So the point is not whether the person it's criminally culpable or not. So the point, it's always criminally culpable. The point is, it's just a matter of common sense. You know, is this what I want? Is this what I want? Is this that, you know, if I want to reveal my money, then people are going to look for opportunities to rob me. So, by making this common sense issue into a complicated moral rights issue, and a rights issue, we just muddy the whole field of discussion. So similarly, you know, women, when they dress, you know, if they are going to, it's just like a person showing the money that a person has. Similarly, if women are going to dress in such a way that they reveal the provocative bodily parts, the result of that is going to be that people are going to be agitated. And people are, so basically the person who is exposing the money is sending a message. You know, there's a lot of money available, it's easily available, come and take it. And now somebody says, no, I don't want to send that message, but this is the way I want to keep my money. No, that's not going to work. If you're going to keep the money showing out of the pocket like that, that's the message that people are going to pick up, whether we want it or not. Similarly, when women dress in clothes that expose their own bodily parts in provocative ways, then that they may not want to send that message. Of course, many women may want to send that message also. Women may think that, you know, I want men to be attracted to me, but they shouldn't touch me. They should be amazed at how beautiful I am. You know, I like to see how big their eyes are. Oh, mouths fall open, eyes become, oh, I'm so beautiful. I want to attract people's attention, but they shouldn't touch me. You know, if we dress in particular ways, certain messages will be sent. And those messages, when are sent, people are going to respond in that way. So, here Krishna is saying, so that means we have to understand that lust is not just situated in the male senses. Lust is situated also in the female senses. So that is, with respect to, so then, just as men have to regulate their senses, women also have to regulate their senses. And the way women regulate their senses is by concealing their body properly in clothes that are meant to be modest. They are meant to be non-provocative. So in this way, the responsibility is on both sides. Otherwise, essentially what is going to happen is that the person is going to get provoked, and the person is going to fall prey. So, it is the lust is situated in the senses, mind, intelligence. And it has to be, one has to be freed from that influence. So, how do we free from? So, here Krishna is going to say that it is situated in lust, mind, intelligence and senses. The next verses he will start telling, from 41 to 43, how one can control and conquer lust. That we will discuss in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.